Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, to ask a question, please press star and then one. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this point. I'll now turn the meeting over to your host, Mr. James Barbaro. Sir, you may begin.
And actually, that's going to be Tony Frontino. Thank you.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, everybody. It's Tony Frontino with Southern California Edison and the Energy Procurement Group. I'm joined here today by other representatives, including PG&E and San Diego Gas and Electric. I want to thank you for taking the time to participate in the Bioenergy Market Adjusting Tariff public webinar today. We hope that through this process, you'll have an opportunity to learn more about the program, as well as give you an opportunity to ask questions related to the information that we'll be presenting. So before anything else, I'm going to turn it over to Byron from PG&E, and take it away.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tony. All right, before we get started, I'll go through a couple quick disclaimers. We have legal disclaimers on slide two regarding antitrust and document conflict. Regarding antitrust, all participants in today's meeting shall comply with antitrust guidelines. These guidelines direct meeting participants to avoid discussions of topics or behavior that would result in anti-competitive behavior, including restraint of trade and conspiracy to create unfair or deceptive business practices or discrimination, allocation of production, imposition of boycotts, and exclusive dealing arrangements. Regarding document conflict, this presentation is intended to be a summary-level discussion of market-adjusting pricing mechanism established for the Biomet program, and to the extent that there are any inconsistencies between the information provided in this presentation and the requirements in the Biomet tariff and PPA, the Biomet tariff and PPA shall govern. On to slide three, just a few quick reminders as well. This presentation is intended to provide summary-level information. We couldn't go through the whole Biomet program and the tariff, all the details of the tariff and the PPA in just these 2 hours. So to fully understand the Biomet program, please read both the Biomet tariff and PPA thoroughly. All communications, in addition, and program materials will be posted on the Biomet websites listed on slide 26. Those sites should be available now, and after this presentation, all questions should be directed through those sites. Again, on slide 26. And then once more, throughout the presentation, we will have two breaks, four questions, and then one at the end as well. Those breaks in the middle, we're hoping to limit to 5 minutes so that we can keep the presentation moving. And then, again, the one at the end, we'll take the remainder of our time until 3 o'clock. Moving on to slide four, we have an agenda, obviously the introduction now, and then a quick note about supplier diversity. I'll hand it off then to Andrea, also from PG&E, to go into the specifics of Biomet and the program. We'll break then quickly for a question and answer session before diving into PPA terms and the Biomet queue and program period process with Sean from Southern California Edison, and to Ted as well for the specifics about the PPR, which is the application process for Biomet. Another quick break for questions before moving on to the Biomet online platform overview, back with Andrea from PG&E, and then interconnection overview with Tina from SDG&E. We've then got contact information listed in the slides as well, and then we'll open it up for final questions before we finish. Moving on now to slides five and six for regarding supplier diversity. The IOUs encourage women, minority, disabled veteran, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender business enterprises to participate in the Biomet program. That being said, diverse business enterprises will not necessarily receive any advantage in the Biomet application or evaluation process. Applicants can help the IOUs achieve General Order 156 goals and comply with them as follows, either as a Tier 1 or as a Tier 2 qualified, certified, diverse business enterprise. And General Order 156, just for background, was adopted by the California PUC in 1986 and was added, and electric procurement was added to that in addition in 2012. The goals of General Order 156 are to promote greater competition among utility suppliers by expanding the available supplier base and to encourage greater economic opportunity for diverse business enterprises historically left out of utility procurement. General Order 156 also sets the rules governing, among other things, goals, annual reporting, and the annual planning in the development of programs to increase participation of diverse business enterprises in procurement of contracts from utilities as required by PUC code. And then there are links at the bottom of slide 6 as well if you'd like further information regarding supplier diversity. With those notes out of the way, we will transition to slide 7, and I'll hand it off to Andrea Torres to kick off Biomet.
Thank you. So we're now on slide 8. Good afternoon. So what is Biomet? Biomet, or the Bioenergy Market Adjusting Tariff, implements Senate Bill 1122, which amended the PU code as it relates to feed-in tariffs. It requires the three large investor-owned utilities, or IOUs, to offer up a set number of megawatts to eligible bioenergy facilities under long-term power purchase agreements, or PPAs. The design of the program is largely based off of the existing REMAT program for all that's available for all types of renewables. Under both REMAT and BioMAT, every 2 months, utilities offer up a set number of megawatts to BioMAT applicants. The program design, the program may be available for up to 5 years or may end sooner if all the available allocation from the IOUs is contracted out. Generators may sell under full buy, sell, or excess sale transactions. Excess sale is when you serve your on-site load first and export the rest to the IOU. And the PPA terms available in this program are 10, 15, or 20-year terms. The available contract price will start at $127.72 a megawatt hour in program period one, or period one, which will commence on February 1st, 2016. Once a PPA is executed, the contract price is fixed over the delivery term and are subject to time of delivery factors in Appendix C of the PPA. Available prices have the potential to adjust every 2 months and are set according to market acceptance and market depth on a statewide or all IOU basis. Slide 9, just a brief history on the implementation timeline. So, as I mentioned, BioMAT implements SB 1122, which was set into law by our governor back in 2012. The California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, set the program rule, PPA, and tariff terms through two decisions in 2014 and 2015. The program opens for applications on December 1st, just a few weeks away, or a couple weeks away, and the first bi-monthly program period, or auction, starts on February 1st, as I mentioned. Slide 10. So the California legislature allocated 250 megawatts statewide among the three bioenergy categories as follows. So category one encompasses various biogas, including biogas from wastewater treatment facilities used in the reclamation of sewage or industrial waste, diversion of organic solid waste from disposal at solid waste landfills, waste or byproducts of food processing or manufacturing facilities, and anaerobic digestion of biodegradable substrates or co-digestion. And that target was set on 110 megawatts on a statewide basis. Category two is for dairy and other agricultural waste, bioenergy, anaerobic digestion of dairy waste, for one, and the other being biogas or biomass from facilities or other on agricultural premises that utilize the waste or byproducts of growing crops, raising livestock, or growing horticultural products. That target is set at 90 megawatts. Category three is for forest management, particularly sustainable forest management, particularly with regard to fuel reduction activities for applicable regulations or infrastructure clearance activities. And you'll find the more detailed explanations of these categories in the Section N of the BioMAT tariff. The next slide, slide 11, The CPUC further assigned megawatts as outlined in this table among the IOUs according to peak load and adjusted for resource availability. So you'll find that the peak load allocation, SCE, has 114.5 megawatts of allocation, PG&E 111, and SDG&E 24.5 megawatts, further divided up among these three bioenergy categories as follows. Next slide, slide 12, basic eligibility criteria. So again, you'll see a lot more detail behind eligibility outlined in section D of your biomass tariff. But at a high level, the facilities must be located in the applicable IOU service territory for which you're applying. The maximum capacity is 3 megawatts for the generated nameplate capacity. The seller must have site control through either an ownership or option or lease. Interconnection, the projects must be interconnected to the distribution system, and there's definitions of that in the, each IOU's respective interconnection departments, and have passed the fast track screens or completed a system impact study or completed a phase one study through either the distribution group or cluster study process. Fuel requirements, the key component of the BioMet program, 100% of fuel use must be from an eligible fuel resource category with at least 80% from the applicable fuel resource category under which you are applying. It's a selected category when you submit your application. The exception is for Category 2 dairy, under which 100% of the fuel use must come from the dairy digester. Commercial online date is a key component underlying the legislation. The facilities must commercial online date must occur on or after June 1st of 2013. With regard to REMAT, while you may choose to participate between REMAT or BioMAT, you can't concurrently participate in both queues. Similar to REMAT, there's an application fee of $2 per kilowatt. That's on a capacity basis of your project. And in addition, project documents, we'll be asking as part of the application, at minimum, a single line diagram, facility layout, site map, initial fuel use attestation, a table of major components, and ownership documentation. We'll go over this in more detail later in the webinar. Slide 13. Some additional eligibility criteria include developer experience. At least one member of the development team must have completed at least one project of similar technology and capacity. Daisy chaining, project must be the only exporting project being developed, owned, or controlled by the applicant on any single contiguous pieces of property. There's further detail behind that requirement in the tariff. Metering, the projects must be electrically independent and separately metered. Important to note that facilities of 500 kilowatt and above must have an ISO meter. Qualifying facility, a key component of this PURPA program is that a project must be a qualifying facility as defined by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. Other incentives, a project that has received as a self-generation incentive program, SGIP incentives, within the last 10 years is ineligible to participate in BioMAT. EPIC funds are allowed under this program per the decision. We don't have that outlined here, but that is clear in the tariff and PPA. Net energy metering. A project may be currently under a net energy metering agreement. However, if awarded a PPA, the applicant must terminate participation in NEM for the project prior to the PPA's execution date, or at the very minimum, prior to commencing operations under the PPA. And with that, we'll take a break for questions before turning it over to Sean Smith from Edison, who will go over PPA terms as well as application and program period processes. Operator, can you field questions?
Thank you, Speaker. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. Record your name clearly when prompted. To cancel your request, you may press star two. One moment for the first question, please. We Once again, participants, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. No question at this time, speaker.
Hello. Okay, everyone. This is Sean Smith from Southern California Edison. I'm in contract origination and co-lead on the Biomat program. We're on now slide number 15, high-level PPA terms. And one thing to remember here as we look through these next two pages, a lot of this we've already gone through in previous slides, but first point here is the PPA terms are non-modifiable, and modifications to the facility require IOU approval. So this is a tariff-based program, and we get this a lot, but PPA terms are locked in with the program. You will have 24 months to get to COD with one possible six-month extension. We've talked about the length of term, the full buy-sell or exit sale, so we don't really need to go into that. And IOUs are entitled to all the product, the energy, the renewable, the RECs, and the resource adequacy benefits, as well as the capacity attributes. We've spoken already, too, about an eligible AQF facility. So if we go to page 16, there's, along with the fuel requirements we've talked about, the verification is going to be determined by the CPUC. They've got to do that by August of 2016, so stay tuned for that. We spoke about the CAISO metering. On the guaranteed energy production, it is 180% of your amount over a two-year period, over the amount of megawatt hours you projected to produce. For collateral requirements, we are at $20 a kilowatt for the post to maintain during the life of the contract. Forecasting obligation, IOU is must be the scheduling coordinator for these projects, and that's it for that. On page, we can now jump into the Biomat queue and program period. And we are on to page 18. So the application process, it's called a program participant request. So you'll hear those intermingled, but they are basically the same item. And so if you look through this flow chart here, what you'll see is you enter the queue. And then once you've submitted your complete form, the IOU has 20 business days to process that application or PPR. During that time, if there are any deficiencies, that resets the clock into a 10-day period, business day period. And if you, any of you have been associated with REMAT programs, you'll see that there could be a lot of back and forth during this time. The one thing to remember, once your PPR is confirmed to be complete, then it moves into one of the three fuel resource categories. Special note, any PPRs we receive during December 1st through 7th will be, for queue number position, will be randomized. So in the first week of applications, we will not randomize that after that point. As you see here, once you're put into one of these three categories, a line starts to develop with the number of participants and megawatts in that period. So if you go to page 15. So this is an example of what would happen in the SCE Category 1 queue. And it works similar to REMAT in the fact that if we're allocating 6 megawatts per program period for this situation, we've got seven participants that have passed the PPR, and we start sending out our formal reject or accept notices. And in this case, 3 of the people or participants accepted that price. However, number 7 there put us over the 6 megawatts. So in that case, the program is deemed fully subscribed, yet queue position 7 WWPP doesn't get a contract because that would put us over the 6 megawatt amount. We go to the next slide, 20. So pricing, this is where we start to break off from REMAT. Market depth is actually, and market price is determined at a statewide basis. And the starting price we've spoken about is $127.72 a megawatt hour when the program launches February 1st. And each pricing category will adjust independently in these bi-monthly program periods. So if we go to slide 21, the pricing categories are actually, there are 4 categories if you look at the bottom of this slide. Category 2 is broken into dairy and other ag. So that price can move independently. However, the allocation of the fuel resource category in Category 2 is one number. So, for instance, SCEs is roughly 50-something megawatts. That will be pulled both from dairy and other ag. So, one thing to note, too, the CPUC wanted was when the program first starts, there's only 3 projects needed in each of these statewide pricing queues. However, once one participant accepts the price, the trigger goes up to at least 5 projects. So that's something to remember going forward. Slide 22. This is how prices move. And again, this is a statewide function that the IOUs administer together. But what we look at here is, again, Category 2 has those 2 categories. And after each program period, it's determined the allocation. We adjust either, depending on the number of people striking, if less than 20%, this gets a little bit confusing for each statewide pricing category. The statewide subscription rate is megawatts divided by the lesser of the allocation megawatt-wise, or if that megawatt amount is less than, for instance, in Edison's case, it would have been 6 megawatts. If that amount is less than that 6 megawatts, that would be the new denominator. Once that is determined, people either accept or reject on that. And if less than 20% accept the price will increase. If 20 to less than 100% accept the price, no price adjustment. And then if we get that 100% rate, the price goes down. And this is only if we've got more than if our queues are filled up, that the price can move. So slide 23. The amount of the adjustments start when they go up or down at 4, 8, and then they continue at 12. If they're uninterrupted, and they go either up or down, as long as they're uninterrupted. Once there is this interruption, we reset and we begin again at 4. Next slide. We've talked about this already, but you know, key differences with REMAT are statewide pricing. So subscription and market desk are assessed on a statewide basis. And then, again, we've talked about Category 2 is broken up into these two categories, both with dairy and other ag, to give both types of projects correct pricing, given their LCOE differences. So now we, oh, PPR. So now we're on the PPR. Next slide. We have Ted taking over for that.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. We're on slide 26 now. My name is Ted Gribble. I work for Southern California Edison. I'm an engineer. That said, I do not represent Pacific Gas and Electric or San Diego Gas and Electric. So there will probably be some slight differences to how the interaction works with those two utilities, but in general, this process is identical between the three utilities, and all the information I'm about to share with you applies to all three. So, keys to a successful PPR application. Well, the first step would be to familiarize yourself with the materials available to you, which are contained on the each IOU's BioMat website. All three of those platforms are identical, even though those URLs look all very different. So go ahead and log on to those websites, download all the documents. That's where you can find the tariff and the PPA, PPR templates, and all sorts of other helpful documents. Also, throughout the process, please ask questions. We prefer to have complete and high-quality PPRs so that that 10-day cure period, we don't have to push any deadlines on that. We'd like to get all these things completed in a timely manner. And then, again, just read all the instructions carefully. When you're going through the website, even as you're filling out the offer, the PPR forms and things, there'll be little help bubbles, information pop-ups, so just follow those instructions. So getting into slide 27 on the required supporting documentation, there's sort of six things, or depending how you lump them together, five things that we look for here. So the first thing is a fuel use description. For fuel use description, it's much of what we already discussed about, you know, what's the source of your biogas or material, how much of it are you going to use, and those sorts of things. The table of major components will just list just that. You know, what's your prime mover, generator, what are the ratings on those things, what's your transformer look like, that type of information. Facility layout drawing. We'll get into some more details on each of these, but there's a facility layout drawing showing like a plan view of your facility, single line drawing showing the electrical side of that, a legal description of the site. So we're talking like settlers' parcel numbers, things like that. Site map. That site map is really just so that when we need to go out and inspect your site, we know how to get there. So that's pretty easy. So why are these documents important? We expect that you will build the facility the way that the PPA, the eventual PPA, says. The PPR, there's room for adjustment between the PPR completion process and the PPA being signed, but once the PPA is signed, absent an amendment, we hope that when we go out to visit the facility, it'll look just like that. Okay. Let's get right into slide 28 now. This goes over the general issues that we see when we're reviewing these. This is aggregated from many different solicitations that we've done. And you can see even all those sub-bullets under that first main bullet, they all go with to the idea of consistency. You'd be surprised how much we see that there's just names on the drawings. They don't match the PPA. A lot of these projects have had, you know, various stages in their evolution, and maybe now... Maybe they were bidding at the REMAT a couple years ago, but now they're bidding at the BioMAT now, and things were updated, but not all the drawings were updated, so that's the type of stuff I'm thinking of here. So just make sure before you hit submit that all of the project names are consistent, the equipment that you're specifying is consistent, the overall size and other details are consistent with the interconnection document that you provided. If there is any discrepancies between the project that's currently contemplated and what was studied in the interconnection document, please make sure that the transmission provider or the IOU has the transmission and distribution side of the IOU has provided a letter that says these are not material changes. And this last little bullet is some of these projects may already have a GIA executed, but we'd still like to see the interconnection document, like the study that came along with that. So please include that in the PPR. That's just of note. Site plan drawing. So on the site plan drawing, I mentioned it's like a plan view, overhead view of your facility. Make sure all the equipment locations are shown. Here we're talking about digesters, gasifiers, generators, interconnection equipment, even things like the site fence and the egress points. I just mentioned that, but the boundaries of the site should be shown. And if there's anything right next to your site, like another generator, we already talked about daisy chaining not being allowed, but say there's a solar facility next door, let us know so that we are very clear that is actually separate from project that you're submitting. It can get confusing when we go visit the site and we look next door and we see something different. And anyway, that should all be kind of obvious stuff. Now, the legal description of the site and the site map, that's a duplicate bullet there, but on the site map should also show any adjacent projects and be very clear where the boundary of this particular biomap project is. The legal description should only be APNs that are part of this site, so that's just a real quick couple of lot numbers, maybe just one lot number. You could even pull the assessor's parcel map if you have that available and just include that as your legal description. That's helpful. Let's go to the next slide, slide 29. For the single line drawing, we often see a lot of errors or missing items from single lines, but be sure to include and describe all of the major equipment. Things that are often missing are the interconnection point, and on the interconnection point, we like to know more details, such as like what substation that's going to be connecting to, what circuit and what voltage, things like that. Transformer specifications are often missing from single line diagrams. Substation light and power should be allotted for generating facility station service, if there is any. There most likely will be. We'd like to see that auxiliary transformer shown. The metering should be shown on there. You know, you may or may not need an ISO meter, but any metering should be shown. This next bullet applies to if you have several smaller units that are all tied together in the same project, like small fuel cells, so to speak, say three trains. You don't necessarily need to show all three trains in detail on a single line. You could just have a typical one. But please show all the detail for at least one of those. The type of generator should be shown too, synchronous, asynchronous, inverter, et cetera. So key takeaways from these slides. Refer to the biomat instructions. That's really important. There's a lot of good information for you on the websites that will help you to submit a high-quality application. Label everything and err on the side of inclusiveness. So if you're thinking about leaving something out, don't. Pay attention to those details, too, though, because we do look at these documents very closely, and it is often one of the biggest time sucks of the curing period. So we only have 10 days to cure. So thank you. I think we have a question and answer session next. So if the operator would like to open the line, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you, speaker. We will now begin the question and answer session again. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. Any questions in queue? First, coming from the line of Mass. Your line is open.
Hi. My question goes back to earlier in the presentation around slide number 12, where it said that there was a limitation that you couldn't have, one operator could not have more than one facility on one site. And my question is, does that, it said particularly an exporting facility. So if you already had, for example, a net metering facility on a site, could you additionally add a biomat exporting facility on that same site? Thanks.
Hi, this is Andrea with PG&E. Yes, you are allowed to have a co-located or, you know, on the same property NEM project, but they must be separately metered, interconnected, and clear that they're under separate facilities. There are, in fact, separate facilities. So while you may have large premises with various generators on site, you know, that's something that that was considered in the PPA and tariff.
Thank you. A question just came out from Mr. Kevin Bass. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon. So it's a two-part question. Is directed biogas considered acceptable? And secondly, if that's serving a larger facility, say a 20-megawatt facility, can that 3 megawatts of biomat be considered? Thank you.
What is directed in your definition?
Biogas generated in California and directed through the public pipelines to the point of consumption.
This is Andrea. I think there may be some language regarding pipeline biomethane, for example, in the PPA. But right now, of course, you are running any biogas through, you know, electric generator. But I don't. Hold on 1 second. We're kind of. I'm being pointed to just reference to appendix section N of the biomat tariff, where it spells out more clearly the types of biogas that are eligible for the program. So, for example, you know, biogas from wastewater treatment, municipal organic waste diversion, et cetera. They must be generated from those types of activities.
Okay. So if it qualifies under California Renewables, directed biogas would qualify for biomat.
Just to be clear, the CEC may have their own, you know, definition of a renewable energy resource, but this program layers on additional requirements for eligible biogas that you have to meet.
All right. Good. Thank you.
I'd like to add a comment to that, Kevin. Hi, this is George Wiltsey with SCE.
Hey, George.
How are you? Many years.
Good.
So I haven't read the biomat decision for some time, but I do remember some clear discussion in there that there's not a one-to-one correspondence between what the CEC defines as eligible resource and what the biomat program itself considers an allowable fuel under that program. So my recommendation, if you really want to research that further, two things. One is go back to the decision and look at that discussion, but more importantly, you need to refer to the tariff. And then, I guess, thirdly, wherever your facility is going to be, whichever IOU's territory it's going to be in, I would certainly recommend that you correspond and discuss that with, you know, that site-specific issue with that IOU as part of your preparation to that or not to submit. Does that make sense?
Will do. Yes. Great. Thanks, George.
Andrea with PG&E, with regard to your second question, I think you're asking, we do get often questions about this, and this is definitely addressed in the proceeding, but you know, you can't have a 20 megawatt generator and just say you're going to export, you know, the equivalent of 3 megawatts of capacity in the program to qualify. So that
we cannot.
Cannot. So the limitation on this and in REMAT is on the generator's size or, yeah, nameplate.
Okay. All right.
I have one more point that regarding that kind of not perfect alignment between CEC eligible resources and biomass. For instance, one category exclusion from biomass is landfill gas. While it's a CEC renewable resource, it is explicitly excluded per the first decision from December 2014 in biomass.
Right.
Around that.
I saw that. We're talking about AD food waste, so that's so noted. Thank you for pointing that out, though.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Lane. Your line is open.
Hi. My question is around TPR key positions. Are there already people in the key position that are ready for biomass to go live? And if so, how many megawatts are already stacked up in each category?
This is Andrea. PG&E has gotten similar questions about that before. So no, there are no. The program opens on December 1st, so brand new start, fresh start. Any sort of projects that may be participating in REMAT are certainly not rolled over into biomat. We've received that question before. So everyone has an equal opportunity to apply starting December 1st, and they can apply at any time. So the timing of your application, of course, indicates your queue position in the program and also the timing of which program periods you can participate in. So it has to be deemed complete, your application, before you can participate.
Yeah, and one more quick comment from George. That is a great segue into the next part of this presentation, because all of this is done through the website platform that we're about to describe, and that website platform will not be open for business until December 1.
Yeah, this is Andrea. I think is that our signal to close out on those current questions right now to keep with time, or do we?
I would say we could go further. We're going pretty fast.
Yeah, if there are more questions, I think we have time.
Yeah.
Great.
Operator, are there any more questions?
Yes, speaker. We still have three. Would you like to take them?
Yes.
Okay. Next question comes from the line of Melina. Your line is open.
Yes. I just wanted to know whether biomass can be imported to California from Texas.
No.
Is there a restriction that it can be used only from California forest?
That's correct. Correct. So bioenergy, while I think the sourcing of bioenergy can be anywhere in California, it must be within California. So
California.
Yeah.
Sourcing should be. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Lon. Your line is open.
With regards to the attributes that the utility gets in resource adequacy, do these projects have to have full deliverability status?
They do not. So that's unique to this program. So you can apply and come online as energy-only status, and it's entirely at the seller's option, short of, you know, administratively unburdensome requests to obtain resource adequacy. But in terms of full capacity deliverability status, that whole process, you can choose to do that at any point throughout the delivery term. And I think Section 4.3 of the PPA outlines resource adequacy requirements. So you're asked to, commercially reasonable efforts to ensure that we have all resource adequacy benefits associated with the facility.
Okay. Okay, next question comes from the line of Ross. Your line is open.
Thank you. I may have misheard, but I just wanted to check on page 20 in the presentation. I think it was stated that the starting price was $127.72 post-TOD. But I believe that would be pre-TOD. Is that correct?
It is pre-TOD. The sentence reads, it's just giving background on what that price is based on, which was based on the average post-TOD price of the first four renewable auction mechanism auctions. That's just giving a little background into how the commission came up with $127.72 for program start.
Okay. And my second question is there a definition of affiliated or unaffiliated?
We have, you'll find the PPA has a capitalized term for affiliate.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. No more question in queue, speaker.
Okay, so we're on to the next section.
And that's Andre.
All right, navigating that. So we are on slide 31. So I'll be going over the basic functionality of these online platforms that are hosted by Axion for each of the IOUs. So each IOU has their own platform, while we do communicate together on the statewide price. I believe all three IOUs, I know PG&E has recently, just this morning, made available the link to our platform, and it has limited kind of functionality right now pending December 1st PPR application period. PG&E did post a sort of draft PPR worksheet, just a Word doc for you to reference in more detail for what you can expect to find in that application. But in this presentation toward the end, you'll see that currently only SCE has their link to their Axion platform provided in this presentation, but before we post, we'll also include SDG&E's and on our respective websites. So the purpose for this platform is to accept and manage submitted PPRs, administer the bi-monthly program periods, award PPAs, post program materials, and communicate with applicants and registered users. A more in-depth tutorial will be forthcoming on each of the online platforms, and we encourage all to read those tutorials before you begin the PPR process, because many of your questions may be answered there. And we always like to note using IE is a good idea for using this platform. So on slide 32, registration. So you can register as an applicant or a non-applicant, and the difference there is that applicants have full access to the site. Non-applicants, can receive program updates and messages, but they can't use the PPR management or program period function of the platform. When you register, you're asked for very, straightforward, simple information about, you set a user name, you enter your applicant name. Now, that's a company name typically. Not your, first and last name. It's the organization, the legal entity that will be submitting the PPR and has some, ownership or control of the project. We do have consultants using this platform, say under REMAT, and they're free to do so as long as they are registering on behalf of the applicant and must be authorized to, submit the legally binding acknowledgments on their behalf that kind of open with each PPR. And you'll be asked for your contact information. And an attestation will be kept, your profile information will keep up to date. So we have the latest and greatest there. Slide 33, so speaking of the profile, once you're registered and you log in, you'll see a tab up on the top saying profile. And that automatically populates information that you provided upon registration. And there you can, as you have any changes to staffing or location, you can update your information there. You can also manage your notification preferences. And then a key component of this is for the market depth assessment. So when each IOU convenes every two months to determine what the next program period price should be, we'll be looking at market depth across the statewide pricing queues And so this is one area where you'll be providing information on any additional projects that may not be under your, you know, profile, but maybe elsewhere, you know, submitted by another company, say. So you would list any projects for which you have any ownership interest, and we ask that you keep this information up to date throughout participation in the program. Slide 34. So you'll be spending a lot of time in PPR management as a participant. Here you can create a new PPR, view an archive of all your PPRs. This little snapshot here below is just an example of two PPRs that are listed in different states. On the far right, you'll see one is deemed complete and the other one is deficient. You can update your documents and other PPR data to the extent that's allowed. So you'll find that once you have a deemed complete PPR, we allow updates to certain areas but not others. So, for example, the location of your project is the location of your project, the size of your project is typically the size of your project. But you can update other data, and we'll make that. That'll be clear in the form. And you can withdraw or transfer your PPRs even to other registered applicants. That's per a three-party agreement on that. And you can change your applicant's and seller name as well. So next slide, slide 35. This is just a section, a portion of the acknowledgments and attestations you must check off on and sign before you fill out a PPR. So you do this for each PPR you submit. And a lot of it goes over program governance, eligibility criteria, the subscription process, and various other acknowledgments and attestations. Slide 36, here's a snapshot of what the PPR, the section of the PPR looks like once you're in it. So on the left, you'll see these tabs you can navigate through your PPR, kind of awarded by, you know, area. On the right, you'll see how you fill out fields. A lot of them are checkboxes. Other ones are text fields, you're providing information. Any required fields are highlighted in red. On the left in the navigation bar, once you've completed all the required fields, you'll see a checkbox appear as you page through. And anything that you didn't complete fully will be showing up as a fraction. You'll see 4-9 there, just indicating that I still have five fields to fill out before that section is complete. And your work is saved at any time. There is a save button, but this site does save your work as you go along. Page 37, this is, we'll just walk through at a very high level the types of information that we're requesting in the PPR. So your applicant seller information, your supplier diversity information, additional owners behind the seller entities that you provide, the facility name and location that includes the nearest address, the lat and long, parcel numbers, existing land use information. Fuel and operations. So this is where you select the fuel resource category you're applying to, so which of the three product types or categories you're applying to. Short area for a narrative description of the fuel use and why it qualifies for that category. And some basic purpose qualification questions, whether you're a small power producer, et cetera. And we also collect additional operational characteristics for curtailment orders. You'll see that in the PPR worksheet and once you navigate through the site, some basic information on the limitations of your facility for responding to curtailment. Page 38, interconnection information. This is where, just a reminder, you'll have your study in hand and your interconnection key number available, so you'll provide that number along with the interconnection and delivery point, the voltage that you're interconnecting to, the estimated COD date per the interconnection documents, and the any network upgrade amounts you're triggering as a result of connecting this project. Other PPA terms, expected PPA COD is often very close to your estimated interconnection commercial operation date. Contract capacity, what type of transaction are looking for, full buy, sell, exit, sale, what kind of term. contract quantity, that's key. So you'll be providing megawatt hours per year you estimate to deliver in each contract year of your PPA. And existing facility information. Now, this program, again, is intended for projects that commence operations after June 1st of 2013, but it is possible in that interim you've brought your project online. This program lasts for 5 years, so this is a possibility. Page 39. This last section of the PPR, this is where you upload all of your documents. So, you know, we went through all of the document requirements here, so I won't go through that again. All right. So page 40. So the platforms also manage this is just how you submit. So first, you know, your work is saved at any time, but it's not submitted until you click submit. And your PPR fee of $2 per kilowatt is automatically calculated. And you'll let us know how you expect to make that payment. And your PPR will not be deemed complete until you make that payment by check or wire, and instructions are provided. Slide 41. As mentioned earlier, Sean mentioned, you know, there's a deficiency process here. So you have 10 business days to cure your deficiencies. When you get that notification via email, you'll log into the site, and on the left, on the navigation bar, you'll be highlighted in yellow the sections that have deficient fields, and then you'll see text under the applicable field in red, sort of what the utilities have entered and what they're looking for. And then, not represented here, but assuming your PPR is deemed complete after all of that, the site also manages the program period process, as mentioned, and so we're on slide 42, just for your reference, we're kind of flying through these slides. So here you have an eligible PPR. It will have a button where you're allowed to make a selection to accept or not accept the available price. So in this case, starting program period at $127.72. And for those 10 or almost 11 business days, you'll can accept, and you have an opportunity to not accept throughout that period, but your final selection will be automatically confirmed through the system at the close of that price acceptance process period. And the next page, 42. So basically, the platform also handles the bi-monthly, next page. All PPR-specific communications between biomet applicants and IOUs are handled through the platform. In addition to the automatic email notifications that are sent to applicants whenever an action is necessary, the platform has this messages function to manage communications between the applicants and the IOUs. But if you have general program questions, there's also a Q&A tab on this site, not currently shown here, but there is one where you can ask questions for all to see the utility's response to, because many of you may have similar questions that are logged there. So after that said, I will now turn over the presentation to Tina Chase of San Diego Gas and Electric to briefly go over interconnection.
Great. Thanks, Andrea. This is Tina with SDG&E. I'll be going over, like Andrea said, just some basic interconnection requirements, and probably a lot of you are familiar with REMAT, so these are very, very similar. So we'll accept W.OR Rule 21 studies and agreements, and there are multiple study options. There's fast track or supplemental review or one of the studies listed here, or you could utilize an existing interconnection agreement. You must be interconnected to the IOU's distribution system, and the study agreement must support your project's ability to interconnect within 24 months of PPA execution. And if the project would cause transmission system network upgrades above $300,000, please note that you will bear the additional cost above that $300,000. And finally, with respect to Rule 21 or WDAT, you can choose either one unless or until the CPUC determines otherwise. And this is described for reference in more detail in Section D of the biomat tariff. We can move on to slide 46. And so this slide just lists our interconnection links and contacts for each of the IOUs. And we also have some additional information in the appendix regarding interconnection for all of the IOUs as well. So I think we move on to slide 47.
So for further information, we can ask questions at this point if people have any. Operator, we can ask.
Yes, speaker, thank you. Once again, participants, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star and then one. One moment, please. At this time, we don't have question in queue, speaker.
One thing we want to reiterate is if you do not make a selection, if we go back to slide here, if you do not click one of these buttons, price accepted, price not accepted, or cancel, you are out of the queue. You are termed to
have not accepted the price. So, and to make it clear also, if you don't accept the price, you just stay in the queue for participation in subsequent program periods. So,
a question just came up, speaker. Okay, from Mr. Neil Black, your line is open.
Yes, thank you very much for the very helpful presentation. I have a question going back to the initial part of the presentation. Just wanted to understand something. And the example you gave of three different participants accepting the price,
yeah,
and the third participant wasn't able to get the price because it went over the 6 megawatt quantity.
Correct.
Would that entity then be eligible for that same price next time?
No.
Or would it trigger a price reduction and they would not be eligible for the price that they bid on?
Correct.
Yeah, it would. You would not automatically get that price next round. You would be accepting the next program period's price. If there is no market depth, again, just a reminder, the price would not adjust down. So any downward adjustment would be assuming some diversity in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. No further question in queue, speaker.
So if there are no further questions, that concludes our webinar for today. As instructions said, here are additional contact information for all three IOUs. I would direct specific questions to your IOU in your territory on these websites or email, depending on the IOU. This presentation will be posted on each of our websites, so you can pass this along. We'll be sending out more messages, I'm sure, also, and posting FAQs and Q&A questions that are broadcastable to everyone that would affect everybody also. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, speakers. That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.